Movies and Booze on Moncrief.
Of all the gin joints in all the world, she walks into mine.
A martini, shaken, not stirred.
I ate his liver with some fava beans and a nice Chianti.
It is time for our final Movies and Booze of this year. A few days before Santa arrives. Looking forward to their presence are Fionnuala Jones, Zara Hederman and Michelle Lawler. Good afternoon to you all.
Hi guys.
We'll start with you, Zara.
Yes.
Because you have two sporting movies.
Yes.
If you can class ping pong as a sport.
It is a sport. I won a trophy for it as a child.
Did you?
I did. So this film that we're about to talk about really spoke to me in a big way.
Yeah. So tell us about your trophy for ping pong. That's far more interesting.
I was about 10 and I was at a summer camp. It was like a sleepaway kind of summer camp in the fields of County Down, and there was a sports like tournament where there's loads of different sports, and I excelled in ping pong.
Yeah, how many people did you beat?
I think probably about like 6 or 7. No, like I Marty Supremed them. I did Marty Supreme them.
And so, did you not think this could be it for me? This could be a career.
Well, I thought tennis was going to originally be my plan because I had one of those swing balls in my back garden.
Yeah.
Religiously watched Wimbledon and I was like, that doesn't look too hard. I could do that.
Yeah.
But I gave up. I didn't get an injury or anything like that. I just went to secondary school.
And there wasn't ping pong in secondary school?
There wasn't.
No.
No, unfortunately.
See, this is what's wrong with our education system, folks. Underfunded. Now, Saipan, obviously, a lot of controversy. The actual events took place in 2002. So I imagine, Zara, you remember it well.
I do. I was 10.
You were 10?
I was 10,
well,
yeah.
Good God, girl, I didn't think you were that old.
Oh, you're very kind. I was 10. And I think it was like the sporty moment, like the penalties against Spain was my first like visceral reaction to like bawling my eyes out watching that. And now actually the event has like stuck with me so much that Roy Keane is my idol.
Yeah.
And also whenever I'm out and about, if I want to get to know anyone and get a read of them, I ask them what side they're on. So
that's an interesting point. There's probably nobody in the country who can give a dispassionate review of this film because you're going to lean one way or the other on this. So we know what we're going to get from you anyway. You can look forward to that. If you're a Mick McCarthy fan, have your outrage ready for later on. So what wines are we talking about today? One of them has got the baby Jesus.
It's got the Holy Mary, Mother of God. Actually,
she's
on
even
it.
Better.
Come
I like
on.
Her. Yeah.
So we have two really nice Christmassy reds. And they are great examples of if you're going to a wine shop in the next couple of days and you're thinking, I need to get someone a gift, what do I get? And so what the two wines I've brought in today, one is a very classic Bordeaux, and I'm going to discuss how to shop for good Bordeaux, how to not say get ripped off, but buy well, you know, with your budget, get bang for buck out of it. And then the other one, the label is so stunningly beautiful. It is literally the apparition. It is a story of how Christianity came to Georgia. I am not joking.
Anyone Georgia who's... as in Georgia in Europe or the other Georgia?
No, Georgia in Europe, thankfully.
Yeah.
And so it's a Georgian red. So we're going to
Cool.
Yeah, it is really cool.
Yeah. And is it one of those ones that have been buried for six
months? They're quirky. You know stuff, Sean. Real stuff.
I remember like three things the back of doing this for a gazillion years. Okay, cool. I'm looking forward to that. More sport. The gay hockey romance series.
The best kind of sport, you might say.
What happened to all these people?
What do you mean? It's only getting better.
Yeah,
truly.
So tell us about this. A heated rivalry.
Yes.
It's not a great or is that a pun on something?
Because they're rivals. You know, enemies to lovers, you know.
Yeah, okay.
Things get hot when you do things.
Okay.
They play ice hockey, but it's cold there, you know, hot off the rink.
Okay.
Anyway, I digress. Heated rivalry, it's coming to Now and Sky January 10th. This is kind of the little Canadian hit series that it comes from Crave and was hugely successful in Canada, obviously shot in Canada, was picking up so much steam kind of online and word of mouth that HBO took it up in America, and it's just become this viral phenomenon because it's very, very, very steamy. It's very, very steamy.
But has anybody seen it yet?
It is available to seek out in other ways, but it's based on a book series.
I know a guy around the corner. So, like, have people in Canada even seen it?
It's based off a book series by Rachel Reid, and it focuses on these two rival professional hockey players. Shane Halder is from Canada. Ilya Rozanov is from Russia. They play on opposite fictional American ice hockey teams, okay, and they have a bitter rivalry until, like, this mooch. No spoilers, but that's what happens. There's kind of, they're together for years and it spans over years and stuff like that. It has become, this is what I'm saying, like, it became such a word of mouth phenomenon. Like, Crave is a small channel in Canada and would boast a lot of the reality TV offerings over there, like Traitors and stuff like that. But like, not a lot would come from, in terms of television exports, like, not a lot would come from it. But such was the word of mouth that HBO picked it up, and we're getting it now over here in the new year. I wish it was a little bit sooner that everyone could join in on the discussion, but I digress. January 10th is still pretty good for us. It's gaining huge traction, as I said. Like, even the audiobook, I think, has on Spotify, audiobook streams have increased by 1,500% in the last 10 weeks. Such is the...
Right.
The gusto for it. There's a particular needle drop as well that features in the series that I don't want to spoil for people. But that song, that song rose like 135%. Like, this is what people...
That song is even older than the Saipan incident.
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Everyone's going to be talking about this in January. And I know some people can't wait, like me, but you need to watch this January 10th. It is incredible. There's going to be a lot of people talking, for better or worse. I love it. I'm very on board.
Yeah. And so, like, are Spotify making money out of this then because of said song that you mentioned?
I'd imagine so. But like, it's more so that there's a lot of really good needle drops in the, like, I think people get wrapped up in the steaminess of it all and like the normal people of it all, because there's a lot of like explicit adult scenes, but there's a lot of like, the music soundtracking is really good. The chemistry between the actors is insane. They've had to try and come out and like, kind of defend themselves nearly, because there's been some questions around, like, people are going mad, like, speculating about the lead actor's sexuality, which is just kind of weird. And then you've had other queer actors come out and say that the sex isn't representative of queer people. But then what's to say there's one version of gay sex and all that? There's been this whole can of worms in the last 2 weeks where people have been kind of going at it in the press as well. But it's so much more than the raunchy stuff. But the raunchy stuff is really good as well.
Yeah.
So.
Is it known if the two main characters are, the two main actors, I should say, are they gay? No, I don't know.
This is Connor's story.
Some people will make an issue out of that. I don't know if...
Well, like, this is the thing. Like, it brings up a conversation as well as to, like, should they be playing these roles? I'm not sure. It's Connor Story plays Ilya and Hudson Williams plays Shane. None of that's confirmed. No idea. Like, they're very green. I think... Ilya, or your man, Connor Story, has other credits that are escaping me right now. I feel like this might be Hudson Williams' breakout role, but unconfirmed. They're very much playing it up in the press as well, which I think, like, whatever label they are assigned to, they get on really well and they have great crack and they're having a lot of fun with this. So,
yeah.
And people have a lot of fun with it in January.
Okay,
put in
so
the
that's going to be the big, huge thing in January. Chris Evans is coming back to the MCU.
Woo!
Can we name four people who care?
Well, people are very cross about it online. So
are they? Why?
Cared.
Why?
Okay, so obviously Avatar...
Oh, because he's Captain America and he's supposed to be dead or old or something
he's
like
He's supposed
that.
To be old on a timeline. I don't really understand. So basically they're putting out this teaser. This is the Russo brothers' Avengers Doomsday, which is kind of... I can already see the Marvel people going to their phones to text. It's not a reset, but it's kind of, they're kind of bringing in the old and the new, you know, like Robert Downey Jr. is coming back, but he's playing a different character. He's playing Doctor Doom. He's not playing Iron Man.
Fair enough.
All deeply confusing.
Yeah.
So this is from the Russo brothers. They're putting out this new teaser trailer ahead of Avatar Fire and Ash in the States. Anyway, I'm
Which
not sure if we have
it over garbage.
Here. Yeah. Well, but like, shocker, like, blue people again, groundbreaking. Do you know what I mean? I just, whatever, fair play, Jim, you won't give it up. Anyway, this teaser trailer is coming out because people didn't really know what this is going to focus on.
Mm.
And now, like, some fans are very annoyed that we're going back to the Chris Evans Captain America of it all, because the whole thing was, as you said, that Captain America gave his shield or whatever to the other fella and he became Captain America because... Captain America was old and he went away and it got his girlfriend again. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So now people are like, okay, well, we're basically acknowledging that like none of the new stuff worked. You know, the way they came out with the Thunderbolts, who was in that? David Harbour, Florence Pugh, like that was marketed as the new Avengers. And then it kind of flopped at the box office. So it kind of seems like they're just like, well, okay, we'll just walk that back and we'll just do the same things again, because we know you love that. And we know you'll come out because you love Chris Evans.
So we don't know if they're going to kind of pretend none of that happened. Is this, it was all a dream and I got out of the shower?
So in the teaser trailer, just stick your fingers in your ears for 10 seconds if you don't want to hear this, but again, also, it's inescapable online. We see Steve, that's...
Several people crash cars without thinking what's going on.
Do it if it's safe for yourself. Chris Evans, Steve is back and he has a baby. That's all we see in the teaser trailer. And it's okay. Like, Chris Evans will return as Captain America, whatever. That's all we see. So I don't know how they're... rejigging the timeline to, you know what I mean? But then it's also like Robert Downey Jr. is a completely different character. It's, and a lot of the other people are returning, like Sebastian Stan, Paul Rudd, Tom Hiddleston, all these other people. And then you have the new class as well, that's like Florence Pugh, David Harbour, all the people that were in the Fantastic Four. It's very much divided people on, people who are into Marvel, it's exhausting. People who are into Marvel are either all for it or really hate it. And I think people who are agnostic are like, but then what was the point of anything new you were trying to do? You know?
Like the list of people who are in it, they're going to have 5 minutes of screen time each.
Yeah, it's very long. We would be here all day. All day.
So when he gave his shield away, did he become a normal person?
He became, yeah. Oh, they're going to get mad at me for this. I'm sorry. he just became a man, I think, and then went back in time to get the girl he was with in the first ones.
Hmm.
That's amazing. All. Again, sorry, spoilers for a film.
Yeah, but it's a film that came out how long ago?
Yeah, exactly. But yeah. I have to prepare myself.
You know, The Sixth Sense. Oh, he was dead the whole time. Yeah. Who knew?
What?
table tennis is an Olympic sport, lightning fast with an incredible spin. Ping pong is different, played with simple, identical rackets, which you leave on the table when you change, ends during a match. So it's more about the skill of the player, not the racket, says the texter.
Okay.
Interesting. That was not my skill. That wasn't my approach.
So were you ping pong or table tennis? Or did they tell you what the difference was at the time?
Well, I was
lying to you.
They might have lied to me. It could have been a universal catch-all, like table tennis and ping pong.
Yeah, whatever.
Like snooker and pool. Yeah. You know.
I found out on TikTok that they call ice hockey the boy aquarium.
What? I don't know what that is, and I'm really worried that
I'm kind of unsettled. I feel bad. I want to apologise for reading that out just in case.
Yeah.
Let's have a drink, Michelle.
We definitely need a drink after that. Okay, so we are having the wine. So two reds, we don't normally do two of the same colour. So the wine on your left-hand side is what we're going to taste. So from Georgia. And when I say to people, would you like to try a Georgian wine? Most people are like, what? Is that not going to be disgusting? And I say, no, it's not going to be disgusting. So...
there we go.
Was I talking too badly there?
No. It was just the microphone couldn't pick up your voice.
Oh, sorry about that. All of the people, you didn't miss anything.
Yeah.
Anyway,
sorry about that, listeners. I should go and screw in a plug as well.
So this is produced from in a wine region called Kakheti, and the grape is Saparavi, and it's an indigenous grape to the region. And what is amazing about this grape is, you know, if you go and you buy a bunch of white grapes and a bunch of red grapes and you cut them open and the flesh and the pulp is translucent, in the grape Saparavi, it's dark. So it actually creates this extra added layer of fragrance and perfume in the wine. And what I feel like this one tastes like, does everyone like it?
Oh, really? It's gorgeous. Yeah, really.
It is actually, gorgeous. Do you know, we had my other half's cousin, his name's Vinny, I'm going to name and shame him, came into the shop looking for some wine and we had a bottle of this open. I said, oh, would you like to try any taste? He said, oh, it's too nice for me. I'm going to need something cheaper. I was like, lovely, Vinny. Anyway, sorry there. So it's really, what I love about it, he said it's too smooth. It's really smooth and velvety and spicy. And why I think so many people love it, because the Georgian Red, there's a little sister to this, is our top selling wine in the whole company. And I think what people love about it is that it's medium bodied and spicy and summer red fruits. And the longer it is in your glass, the better it gets. It's actually just a gorgeous, gorgeous glass of wine. And you had mentioned, is that the place with the pottery? Is that what you said?
They bury it in these kind of amphora type.
Absolutely. Yeah. Wow. So 8,000 years, they reckon they've been producing wine in Georgia. And the reason why they think this is that they'd found shards of pottery from Neolithic times. And what they were doing was making these giant clay pots and burying them underground. And it did a couple of things. It protects from the heat and the cold. Like, it's actually genius when you think about it. And what's happened in recent times, I'd say the last maybe 15 or 20 years, producing wines in that really ancient way is extremely popular. And contrary to what you would think,
extra expensive, because to produce that current equivalent of the clay pot egg, if you ever hear a wine, you know, someone describing a wine being made in the egg, they're basically creating these giant clay eggs standing up. Very few of them are actually underground. And what you find is the difference between why would you age your wine in a clay pot compared to oak? When you put your wine into oak, it changes the mouthfeel. It makes it really dry. And it also adds like an oaky flavour or a more savoury flavour or a woody flavour. When you age your wines in amphora, it does allow the wine to get extra structure. That's why you would do it. But rather than imparting an oaky flavour and a dryness, it actually imparts, and what I can only describe as, a liveliness. Because that wine is lively,
yeah.
isn't it?
Yeah.
It's lively and fruity and really, I just think it's an absolutely stunning glass of wine. And so you do find a lot of these wines. Now, these are produced, I actually don't know if these are the Bodoba wine, which is what this is produced in the old-fashioned amphora underground, or the expensive new ones, which are overground.
If it's underground, how do they get it out?
Oh, I actually was in Penedès there earlier this year, and I had seen some amphora, and I had worked in wineries many years ago, and used to, if you can picture a giant, you know, the giant tanks, anyway, if you're familiar with them, and how you clean them out is you have to be slight and you climb in, and you literally, it's called digging out a tank, and you literally climb in.
Oh no.
And you leave the
child
lid open,
labor.
Child labor. And yeah. I was really skinny at the time. And you literally shovel the grapes out. And in fact, I had lost a bet. I was working in a winery in New Zealand to see who could dig out a tank quicker, myself or this other fella. I don't know how he fit into it. Anyway, and the loser had to dig out the tank in their undies, and I lost. So that was a funny day.
Yeah.
Well, I had a bikini, actually. It wasn't my undies.
Warm day, at least.
Pardon me?
Was it a warm day?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it was in New Zealand. No, and listen, it was a difference between 14 minutes and 15 minutes, because you're like racing to dig them out. But I don't know, to get into the amphora, you actually have to go in. Like, it's a fairly claustrophobic exercise to do.
I can imagine. Yeah. And like, do you get absolutely manky digging all this stuff?
Oh, yeah, manky. That's why it was actually grand in the underwear, because the clothes were saved, really, you know.
Yeah.
Anyway, look at
The glamour of working in it.
The glamour, I know. Yeah. It was great fun. And I would say about this, if you're thinking, why would I get a wine from Georgia? Like what would I expect it to taste like? And where this is produced, it's the same line of latitude as Rioja. So if you're thinking, is it miles away, you know, Eastern Europe? Like what actually am I going to expect? And so I always say to people, if you like a Rioja, that summer red fruit profile, you're going to enjoy this, because that's actually what you get out of this one. If you like a Malbec, it'll definitely appeal to you. It's got, again, it's that fruitiness. And if you like a Valpolicella Rapasso, do you know, like the baby Amarone style, because it's got these good, it's lusciously red fruit, loads of spice, a little bit of those caramel notes, just a delicious wine. And the label is literally Mary standing over a few
fellas. Oh, yeah, they've gone full bore.
They're gone
religion full, there.
Yeah, absolutely. It's not like Holy Mary and Jesus. It's
just her by herself, just appearing in front of a logo.
Yeah, it's absolutely stunning label. I have people, it actually on my Michelle Lawler Instagram if anyone wants to have a look. But I just think it's amazing. And anyone I showed that bottle to this week smiled with happiness.
Yeah, indeed. Or indeed drank the contents. Or smiled
and
with
it's
happiness,
so delicious.
I would have thought.
Yeah.
Somebody's texted in to clarify, Captain America still has his power.
Okay.
He just retired when he went back in time. Still has abilities. He just packed it all in.
Okay. Thank you.
And to explain the previous comment about ice hockey being the boy aquarium.
Oh, I'm worried.
Apparently this is a viral TikTok trend, rebranding ice hockey rinks as viewing exhibits where women watch male players treating them like aquatic animals behind glass, often with humour about finding partners or observing real men in their natural habitat, turning a night out into a game of a novel date experience. So not objectifying men at all, perfectly acceptable.
Yeah.
We're all fine with that.
Here, here, girls.
Which movie would you like to review first? Come on, go for the bias.
I think we'll go Marty. I think we'll end on a high.
Oh, no. I want to do the other one.
You want to go Saipan's first? Okay.
Yeah. We're going to go for a break now first, though. Are you going to find out how Mick McCarthy was to blame for everything after this?
Now the game's changed, and we need to be prepared. We're going out there to work, aren't we?
And to acclimatise. There's been a bit of an issue. I've been promised some things that haven't been delivered.
We don't have footballs.
You can manage without that stuff.
Without footballs?
It'd be better if we had footballs.
There you go. That's, I suppose, a movie that lots of people have been waiting for. Roy says, good Sieg there from Captain America to Captain Fantastic. I wonder how long those 8'7" wall posters stayed up after Kino was sent packing. We kind of get a sense of where you're standing on all of this. I suppose the main, given that everybody knows the story, it must be hard to tell the story and keep it compelling in that way. And a lot of people, I imagine, are going to go and see this just to see how people are depicted.
Absolutely. And like when I heard the news of this film coming out, I was nervous because, as I said, this event is a linchpin in my life. So I was nervous to know who was going to play Roy Keane. When I heard Anna Hardwick was cast, I immediately felt like, okay, we're in safe hands. He's always excellent. Like, people know him from Normal People and Lakelands. But then the news of Steve Coogan as Mick McCarthy, I was like, oh, Partridge as McCarthy, is that going to be a bit of a caricature? But actually, to be fair to both of them, Hardwick in particular is extraordinary as Roy Keane. Like, and even though when you look at him now in interviews, like afterwards, you don't really kind of think he looks quite like him. But when you see him in the film, he really embodies him extremely well, to the point where I forgot that this was almost a portrayal of him. Like, he does the really like stony Keane thing, but also the like humor in there too. Yeah, like we heard in the clip. Like, and then, you know, as you say, we all know the story. Can we be gripped? It actually does a really great job of keeping you engaged, because especially as someone who grew up in Ireland, saw all of the footage, like the big interview on RTE after it happened, like knowing the trigger, kind of the walk of Roy Keane with the dog, they do a really good job of intersplicing real footage with the dramatized stuff. So in some ways, it's kind of like a fictionalized version of Reeling in the Years. Like, it's really good. The soundtrack as well is excellent. They've some really good choices from like Bob Dylan, the Walker Brothers, loads of kind of football-y kind of classic songs as well. So that is excellent. And then also just reliving all of the drama of it and just remembering like how poorly it was managed for the Ireland team, and like what could have happened if we had been catered to properly. Like, even the thing of like the cheese sandwiches, which is the famous thing of the dietary needs weren't taken care of. Like, all the players as well were seemingly in this hotel just having the crack. And as we heard in the clip, they're like, Mick McCarthy is there, like, we're here to acclimatise. And it's like, no, like, they should have been like heads down, really focusing on the mission of winning the World Cup. To then like the hotel footage of there being no air conditioning, like, it makes you so angry all over again. But it also made me really emotional watching it too, because, you know, we had such an amazing chance. And also just Roy Keane, the sacrifice he had to make of like actually leaving a team, leaving, having to play the honour of playing for your country as well. It's not something he did lightly. He did it, you know, as the captain, almost trying to like show his teammates why we should be standing up for these things.
Now, hang on. Is that, are you talking about the film now still? Are you talking
Absolutely. No, absolutely. Like, that is an integral part of it. And there is parts that are quite electrifying. Like, there is a scene where Anna Hardwick confronts Mick McCarthy towards the end. And it's that kind of reenactment of the famous kind of bust up that's talked about, I think, in Niall Quinn's biography or autobiography, where Roy just kind of lays the riot act down to Mick McCarthy. And like, literally watching that in the cinema, I felt like I was levitating in my seat. Like,
Okay.
No, it is really engaging. And I think the like crucial element to keeping people's attention is that it's 90 minutes long, coincidentally the same as a football match. So they don't overly stuff this film with unnecessary like elements to it.
Yeah.
Which is good.
Now, and is it, because I suppose it's easy to kind of, to depict Roy as, you know, the kind of hero who makes a huge sacrifice on a point of principle. Is it equally fair to Mick McCarthy?
Or can it be? I think it does. It's kind of tricky because they almost make Mick McCarthy look like a bit of a fool, or a bit of a like an easy person to forge a lot of the blame onto, say, from the kind of higher powers at stake. Like, there's parts, like, it opens up with like Mick McCarthy in his car. It's around Christmas time and he's like driving, listening to a charity single that he had with Linda Martin, of them doing a cover with Do You Ever All the Time. So in that ways, you're kind of, he's
we all remember that.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, wow, did this actually happen? So they do set him up as a bit of a comic relief and as someone who seems like he was easily kind of pushed around and didn't really know how to actually handle the pressure that he was under. Because I think as well, we forget like Mick McCarthy wasn't that much older than Roy Keane either. I think they were also on a same team at one, or same squad as well at one point. So in that way, I felt, and even if I was agnostic in this, I do feel that the Roy Keane character comes across much stronger than the Mick McCarthy one. And then just like the surrounding kind of like the FAI kind of characters, like they have a composite character called Dickie Maloney, who's like standing in.
Sorry, yeah. Does he wear a sheepskin jacket? And fibers to people.
Yeah. So he's kind of a stand-in for like the head of the FAI. And he's just this ridiculous character who's like constantly with like a bottle of champagne in his hands, willing the team to like stay up late, do karaoke in the hotel, like let your hair down. So, yeah.
Yeah. All the action, is it mostly in Saipan? Because, you know, does it deal with the reaction, the convulsions in the country towards it here?
Well, the reactions in the country very cleverly is all of the like real TV footage you know, people being interviewed on the news and like radio clips from, say, like the Joe Duffy show and like Anya Lawler as well, like talking about it on the news. So in that way, it's really well handled in showing just how upset and how visceral people felt about it. And then in terms of the action in the film, a lot of it is set within the kind of the hotel and the basically car park football training camp that they had. But there is some moments of like Roy Keane as well at home in his family home, like with his wife, because obviously before the tournament, he was injured after like a Man United match. So we see a bit of action in his home. We also see a bit of action in Mick McCarthy's home. And I think that kind of duality as well is to show how like kind of Mick McCarthy's family home is made to look quite modest and like a normal person's home. And then obviously Roy Keane's is like a lovely footballer, like with the Manchester United kind of thing. So they do the kind of dynamic really subtly in that way too, which is quite interesting.
Yeah. And at what point does it end? Is it after the Spain shootout or
they show archival footage of that?
Because I suppose you could say the story went on to walking the dog, and it went on for months afterwards.
So it kind of ends with a kind of montage of everything that happened afterwards of like our efforts, you know, playing Cameroon, playing Germany, and all of that. And that is again bring tissues, because it is quite devastating.
Is there writing at the end? I love writing at the end of a film. Not like the chief grip, but you know, they tell you what happened.
Yeah, from what I remember, because it's been a while since I watched it, but from what I remember, yes, they do. I would go also maybe not with family or friends. I'd go alone.
Go by yourself.
Yeah, go by yourself.
And maybe sit as much by yourself as possible in case somebody asks you a question. So a few people texting in want to know the title of the gay hockey romance show. It's called
Heated Rivalry,
Heated Rivalry.
I was coming January 10th.
January 10th is when they're coming. Myself and herself had a glass of Romanian wine last week. Delicious. Who knew, apart from the Romanians? Well, indeed. No, Michelle knew. I can tell you that. Roy Keane sold out our country. What the hell is she talking about? And so it starts.
I knew. Yeah.
Already. Somebody else, Kevin, is texting in to say it's not Rioja, it's Drioja. Please, says Kevin. Sorry, because no doubt when Michelle and pretty much 99.9% of the country says Rioja, nobody knows what the hell they means. They should be saying what you've spelt out there to make it sound like they're just gobbing up some phlegm. Right, YouTube is cracking down on AI.
Yeah, so there had been these two kind of big channels that were using AI to create these fake movie trailers. And they kind of came up as a result of this investigation by Deadline. And they've just terminated them now. The two channels were Screen Culture and KH Studio. And they had over like 2 million subscribers. And the trailers were getting like billions of views. But now they're gone. They were basically, as I said, making these fake movie trailers using pre-existing footage and AI generated content, essentially. And I think after the investigation initially, they got slapped with a warning, and then they kind of changed a lot of their titles to say, like fan made or like parody and stuff like that. But they stopped doing that after a couple of months. So then I think when they started back kind of positing the trailers as real, YouTube was like, absolutely not. And also when YouTube taking over the Oscars and stuff like that, I wonder, is it a bit of that? I just thought this was interesting because I know we were talking in the last few weeks about Disney's investment into Sora and their generative AI stuff, it's so interesting that they're like, oh yeah, we're going to, and there's loads of reasons why they do that. And we talked about it, whether it's like protecting their own content or whether it's them wanting to create AI generated content as well. Like they're doing that, whereas YouTube is like, well, we can't have this, even though people are watching it and responding to it, you know, that way. I just can't, like, this has come up so many times in my own group chats, not necessarily with trailers. And I know this has been going on longer than AI, but AI is making it worse because some AI stuff is more realistic now. If I get a fake movie poster for Pretty Woman 2 in my group chat again, I'm calling out the girls now. I said we're doing AI media training over Christmas because I cannot deal with it anymore. Pretty Woman 2, lots of it, like, they're just, it's honestly an epidemic what we're dealing with. It's crazy.
Yeah. Okay. Well, then that's no bad thing, clamping down it. James, who's listening to us in Middleton, saw the premiere of it. He said it was superb. It has all the elements of a Greek tragedy.
Yeah.
James says, someone else is complaining. I know we all need to know what happened in the film, but Jesus, there's no need to literally detail how the film ends. Well, no, we didn't. Because actually in the end of the film, what happens is that Roy Keane hands his shield over to another person, then travels in time to the girl he originally loved. You are listening to the Moncrief Show on Newstalk. We're going to take a break. Right, let's have a drink.
So we are going to have some Bordeaux. So that's the wine on your right-hand side, if you know the difference. So what?
Yeah. All right, left. Yeah. Which one do I scratch myself
so
with?
So this is the time of year where a lot of people will ask me about Lynch Bage and Bordeaux and these all kind of old traditional Christmas classics. And Bordeaux is a tricky one because people want to buy a Bordeaux. They want a nice one. They might want a gift one. But like, what do you buy? What's good value? How do you do a big name without doing a big name? And so the wine that I've brought with me today is called Le Petit, or Le Petit, sorry, it depends, whoever that fella does Riocco will probably
he's jumping up and down now. Sacre bleu, he's saying.
Smith au Lafitte. So I have Le Petit Smith au Lafitte 2019 here, and this is the second wine from Smith au Lafitte. And so there's this huge thing about when you buy the big fancy ones, so like the Lynch Bages or the Leoville Bartons, those really famous Cru Class or Grand Cru Class A wines. And they're really expensive. You're talking about hundreds of euro per bottle, depending on how old it is and how good the vintage was, etc. And there's a way to actually drink those really premium wines or experience them without having to buy them. And that is by buying a second or third wine from the label. So oftentimes the chateau...
You're going to say this is how you steal them.
Definitely don't steal, guys.
No.
So what they do is there'll be either younger vines within where their vineyards are, or grapes that they just thought weren't good enough to go into the flagship wine, that they don't want to get rid of them. They want to put them in the bin. They don't want to sell them off. So what they'll do is they'll put them under a second label or a third label so that you can then still taste all of the winemaking, all of the skill, all of the grapes without actually having to do that. And so Le Petit Smith au Lafitte is a really good example. It's 2019 vintage. Other famous ones like Echo de Lynch Bage. And I had written down a few there if I could ever remember them, but I won't. So yeah.
But is Lafitte a family? Is it a place? Because, you know, you've heard of Chateau
Lafitte. I'm going to ask that. That is a really old English-French, for hill.
Okay.
So you see Lafitte, and sometimes you'll see it with a double F, sometimes you'll see it with a double T, depending what way it's spelt. And it actually just means little hill. And you might think because it has the name Smith in it, there's always, you'd hear people talking about the wild geese and the Bartons and all that stuff. So Smith is actually refers to a Scottish wine merchant who was, yeah, exactly. So it's still kind of a little bit similar to the story and the legacy of that. But they're a really good way to get something really, really nice. And if you go into a good local wine shop and you say, look, I want to actually give someone a gift, because it's really impressive when you look at the bottle and you know it's a really good, well-made wine without having to have the price tag. And the other benefit of it is actually they drink better in youth. So say, for example, you're going to buy a Lynch Bage, and I think it's a really good example because most people can relate to it or have experienced it or know of it. In the good vintages, like to get that wine at its peak and to get the return on the investment for spending like the whatever 150, 200 euro, you have to wait for it to be ready to drink, which can take up to 10 years, 15 years.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I know. And then you're like looking at it and you know what? Most people, they might just open it before it's rare, whatever, you know. So actually, if you buy a second wine, they drink better in youth. And so this is a 2019 vintage. Have we had a taste of it, by the way?
Oh, no, it's gorgeous. Nice. Yeah, no
doubt. It's spicy and dry and really, really rich. But that's a really good way to also just open it and enjoy it earlier and not think, oh, God, have I just wasted all that money by opening something that's not yet ready? And so a couple of things, just if you're going to go to the shop and you're going to buy a bottle of Bordeaux, like my number one tip is go to an independent wine shop and they'll have lots of really, really good wines there. The other one is look for bottle age. Go for as old as possible that you can find, because the older it gets, the more those like really fruity flavours mature out to become what you can taste in this one, which is more savoury, more nuanced, way more layers. You get different layers of fruit, more dried fruit. So definitely look for something old.
Yeah.
And then you can get lost in vintages and think, okay, what if it's a bad vintage? I would say do your homework if you're going up to that level. Definitely do a little bit of homework. Definitely ask. And if you think, sometimes you go into a wine shop and only the junior person is around and you know you want to speak to the manager because you're looking for something, either do a little bit of research online or wait and if you're going to spend that bit of money. But look, they're a really good way to enjoy something really special at Christmas by going for a second wine or a third wine.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, I'm excited to learn there's going to be a Le Boubou movie.
We're in hell.
Yeah. I assume this is about like a Chinese guy who owns a small shop in a shopping centre and makes a fortune.
Well, would you believe there's actually no writer attached yet? So we don't know what the story is going to be, but who knows?
Well, I've just given away a plot there for nothing then.
Now, I will say it's coming from Paul King, who did Paddington and Wonka before.
Okay.
So, I mean, his output's usually pretty good, but also this was kind of a trend that I thought would have kind of has died. Kind of, I know I'm not a child, I know I'm not the target audience, but it really felt like they exploded for a while and then kind of fell off a cliff. As I said, there's no writer attached yet. Sony is working behind it. They're working with Pop Mart, who was the Chinese retailer who kind of popped it off, for want of a better word. Le Boubou's were from an artist called Kay Sing Lung. And they were originally made by How to Work as part of this line of monster figurines. Mm. There is a whole like lore behind it. Like Le Boubou is the name of the lead monster doll. And then there's a leader who's called Zimomo. And then there's a companion that's called Mococo.
By the time they've made this film, all the people who are mad into Le Boubou's will know all that stuff.
Yeah, truly. Exactly, yeah. So
that's their plan there.
Wait and see.
Genius. Yeah. Right, we'll move on to our second movie of the day. It is Marty Supreme. Here's a clip.
I have a purpose.
Okay. Let me ask you something. Do you make money at this little table tennis thing?
Not yet.
Do you have a job?
No.
How do you live?
Well, I live with the confidence if I believe in myself, the money will follow.
And what do you plan to do if this whole dream of yours doesn't work out?
That doesn't even enter my consciousness.
Maybe it should.
There you go. More needle drops than that as well. Right. Yes. So this is completely fictional story, is it?
Well, as they've described it, it's a fictionalized original rather than a biopic. So basically, Josh Safdie got a memoir of Marty Reisman, who is an actual tennis, table tennis legend from 1946 to 2002. He won loads of titles with that. And they kind of take some elements like his time as a Harlem Globetrotters, like intermission act, like playing table tennis all around the world, which provides like some of the kind of more comic relief moments. There's like a nice little walrus cameo in that bit, which is very fun. Marty Mouser is Timothy Chalamet, and he is going around the world, and as we heard there in the clip, he is toxically ambitious to become the number one American kind of table tennis face and to bring the sport to the country. He has a lot of struggles along the way. Mainly it's his own confidence that kind of gets him kind of into trouble a bit. He's a bit too confident and he doesn't always kind of get the results that he wants. It's a really, really fascinating film. It's 2.5 hours long. It goes by in a flash.
Okay.
So basically Josh Safdie as well, this is his first film since separating with his brother Benny Safdie. But he takes, I feel, all of the kind of Safdie movie magic into this film in terms of like the soundtrack, the stress levels. I watch this film mostly through my eyes or my hands because it's just unrelenting. There's extramarital affairs, there's moral quandaries, there's a missing dog.
A missing dog.
Yeah. The missing dog brings one of the most stressful moments of it. But there's also really interesting stunt casting. So we have Gwyneth Paltrow as a kind of retired actress who comes out of retirement, which also Gwyneth Paltrow, this is her first film in 6 years. So she's coming back to the big screen with this. We also have Abel Ferreira as a terrifying presence across it. David Mamet, Kevin O'Leary, who people might know from Shark Tank. He's an entrepreneur, Canadian one. Timothy Chalamet, without a doubt, I think will get another Oscar nomination for this.
Okay, so right. That's all he wants, really, isn't it?
Yeah, a tie-in with Wonka. He was bringing table tennis, like tables, to his film sets of like Dune, Wonka, and practicing. So he was practicing table tennis since 2018.
Okay, so the table tennis is real.
Yes.
That we're watching there.
And it's so electrifying.
Okay.
It's great. Stuff.
That's our lot for today. Thanks to Fionnuala, Zara and Michelle. You'll be delighted, all of you, to know that Kevin, for the 25th, has lined up some Rioja for his Christmas dinner.
Movies and Booze on Moncrief.
Of all the gin joints in all the world, she walks into mine.
A martini, shaken, not stirred.
I ate his liver with some fava beans and a nice Chianti.